This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's November the 3rd, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, we'll contact Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. He's at the elevator there in Lexington. We'll discuss the cash grain market with him. In agricultural news today, more from the European Union on the WTO negotiations, and it appears the Japanese beef market will open to U.S. imports. I'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. Stay with us for this Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening at 7 o'clock at the Mattoon Public Library for a free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panel. Get your questions answered with one of our panelists, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities in Champaign, and Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. They'll all be there. Bring your questions. There is no charge and no reservations are required. That's at the Mattoon Public Library this evening at 7 o'clock. We hope to see you there.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at 313 and a quarter settlement price. They were up a quarter. The March futures at 328 and three quarters, up one quarter. December contract, $1.96 and a quarter. The settlement price in the corn pit, they were up a quarter for the day. And the March futures at 210 and a half, finished a half higher. May corn, 218 and a half, up one half. And December for next year, up three quarters at $2.44. November soybeans, 591 and three quarters, up 18 and a quarter for the day. January futures at 601 and three quarters, 16 and three quarters higher. And the March contract at 609 and a half, up 16 and a half cents. November soybeans for next year, $6.20 and a half cents. The far deferred November's up 11 and a quarter today. December bean meal at 178.30, up 440. December bean oil, 69 higher, 23.53, the settlement price. From the Mercantile Exchange, November feeder cattle at 116, 7 and a half, or up 55 cents. December live cattle at $90.90, up 60, and December lean hog, $61.87 and a half cents. Finished the day 7.5 cents higher.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now for our look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the marketplace, especially in the bean pit. It seems that the numbers that came out from FC Stone, which showed a larger crop, probably would be predicted by USDA next November the 10th. That's next week. And by Informa this morning, which weren't quite that large, didn't have much of an impact today.
Well, we had a good update there on Tuesday, and then the FC Stone Group came out with a little bigger estimates than probably what everybody was looking for, especially on soybeans. And, you know, beans were mostly on the defensive during the day, but basically rallied back to only close like a penny or so lower. So when the market couldn't really go down on FC Stone's numbers that was released there Tuesday afternoon there on Wednesday, and then we took a look at what the Informa group or the old Sparks group came out with, and they were smaller than FC Stone's. I mean, there really wasn't a lot of reasons around to be short soybeans, and I think that's kind of what you saw there as everybody began to cover their shorts, and that just kind of built throughout the day and had an awful good day up here.
One-day rally, in your opinion, or is this something larger than that?
Well, I think it's the beans have the chart looks pretty good. I mean, a couple things. We did have a so-called double bottom formation kind of develop. I'm looking here at the January futures contract. Late September, we had a low down here around 65 and a half, and then In October 10th, just before the crop report, we had another. We kind of went down there to the 66, and then we had the October crop report that came out friendly or a smaller number because of reduced acres. Sent it sharply higher, you know, into a mid-October high, and then we slid back basically into end of October here for a low there on Monday, and now that's held and bounced back. So what we've got here is higher lows developing. Now, to really solidify it is we need to maybe take out this October high that we put in here around 611 or so on the January contract, and then you would have technically a sideways to higher trend in place. And I think, you know, that bodes well anyway for a market that may want to strengthen maybe on into early December, or seasonally anyway. Soybeans have a tendency to strengthen during the month of November, and then they begin to lose steam any time after you get toward the end of November. A lot of that depends upon probably soybean oil and soybean meal deliveries, what the outlook is for South America, if they've got everything planted and things look real well, as the markets then begin to come under year-end pressure.
And given normal growing conditions in South America, would you be willing to give kind of a range that the sideways trade to higher might trade into?
Well, I think for now you have to shoot for January. I mean, at least short-term here, I think January futures has a shot at climbing into the 620s. There's a shot, you know, once you start closing above $6, beans have a tendency to move in 50-cent increments. So, you know, one wouldn't necessarily want to rule out something up against 650. things are going to have to unfold a little bit before we could begin to argue that. But maybe USDA doesn't raise the crop, as everybody thinks. So we don't know until we see what USDA numbers are here next week. But with a sideways to higher trend in place, as a technician, I would be looking for January futures run up into the 620-ish level prior to the report, and then maybe set back a little bit after the report. Into a mid-November low, and then maybe give the upside another try as we go into that Thanksgiving time frame. And how much of a break we get depends upon whether or not we'd have a shot at climbing back into the 640s. As far as the downside range goes, until we really clear this $6 area, we're still in a what you would probably view as a 550-$6 range.
I have another question for you. If the USDA were to come out with a number that was nearly the same as last month, and I'll remind you that about 74 or 5% of the objective samples had been pulled already last month on soybeans, and more than 80% on the corn, and that USDA, let's see, had revised, made final revisions on acreage for both of those. If they come out with numbers that are fairly close to last month's, what kind of upside potential might that put into this market?
Well, first of all, I think the smaller number that USDA came out with here a month ago because of the reduced acres basically put the bottom in the market. That put the 550 level as pretty good support.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it's been enough now with harvest pretty well over with to let the market try to rally up here 40 to 50 cents off of seasonal lows. Now, I think to go beyond here with any kind of meaningful strength to the upside, you're going to have to start twisting and mixing things up in South America. And, of course, that's definitely on the table. I mean, their planting season is underway here. November is a big planting month for South America. Planting actually continues as you go on into mid-December and maybe even early January on some very late stuff. So the focus now from here on is going to be South America. The trade is somewhere probably watching Brazil the most because of the credit tightness and reduced acreage potentials and whatnot, looking for a crop somewhere between 55 and 60 million tons. So that'll be the pivot point. If the crop begins to start slipping downward from those levels, that will strengthen bean prices as you go on into January. If the crop begins to go up from that level, I think then you'll sink back down. So I think, you know, unless there's a shocker next week, most of the impact from the a million acre less in plantings has probably been pretty well put into the market.
Were you surprised that the corn market didn't react any more today than it did, at least in sympathy with the rise in the beans?
Well, it tells you the corn market is really heavy, and I think what it tells you is there's a lot. This is still some of the impact from the 2 billion plus carryout that we had in corn that probably moved on into market channels through basis contracts or DP contracts or whatnot. And then we're raising another 11 billion bushel crop on top of that. So it just tells you that the inventory level is quite adequate at the moment. Whereas beans, remember the beans got a couple bangs up to the upside here. Number one was that September stocks report, which showed bean carryout smaller than what the trade was working, and then we came in here with an October crop report with a production number well under what everybody was working because of a million less planted acres. So beans are in a much tighter supply demand situation than corn, and like I said, you got some buyers in beans. You got China been buying here. You had a big soybean meal sale here last week at 300,000. So you got a much more active demand picture. And then bean harvest is basically wrapped up. Now, if there's probably a few bean fields around here in our listening audience, but I'd say most of that's gone. Corn, you still have probably a billion bushels of corn yet to harvest, Jeff.
Last week you told us that if corn closed on the cash side above $1.68.5, you'd consider that a harvest low for the cash. That happened. You still satisfied that with?
Yeah, I think you have to say that we did get some confirmations that the cash low is in place, but it depends on how exciting you want to be. We had a cash low here in Central Illinois on October 18th at $1.63. The last couple days, we've been able to close at $1.70. So we're, 6.5 cents off our cash low. I do like the way the market is rolling up. I mean, I kind of view the thing as kind of a rounded saucer-type bottom, which is not real exciting, but it does say that, the bottom is pretty solid in place, and now we're kind of looking at looking for some form of seasonal strength as you go on into November. Now, the problem with futures getting going to the upside, and I think this is where December futures are going to probably drag, is that there are expectations that we're going to see some pretty heavy deliveries in corn, and I think that hangs over the corn market as a price-limiting influence.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us today.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report at Thursday afternoons. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will join us for a look at the agriculture weather. Quick look at the forecast tonight. Clear to partly cloudy skies. Lows between 50 and 55.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
In today's agricultural news, U.S. trade officials say they believe the European Union will make another offer on opening its markets to imports of agricultural goods after its previous proposal was dismissed by nations around the globe. Yesterday, the House Agriculture Committee heard testimony from U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman and USDA Secretary Mike Johanns. Portman says he and Johanns are heading to Europe next week in hopes of finally settling tariff and subsidy issues, which are threatening to kill the Doha round.
We will be in Europe on Monday, meeting with the EU, also meeting with the Brazilian, Australian, Indian, and Japanese trade ministers and ag ministers. And, Mr. Chairman, my frank assessment is if we can't pull it together next week, at our meeting in London or our subsequent meetings Tuesday and Wednesday in Geneva, then I think it's very difficult to see how we can pull together the other issues, like services and the non-agricultural market access issues I talked about, in time for a successful Hong Kong meeting. So the pressure's on.
When he made the previous offer, EU Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson called it Europe's bottom line. Figuring prominently into the discussions is France, whose farmers receive the greatest amount of EU subsidies of any member nation, and which are adamantly opposed to improving Europe's offer to reduce import tariffs. Wednesday, France again criticized the EU's latest offer, saying it will do nothing to help poor nations. Meanwhile, Portman also revealed that the United States is planning to file a WTO complaint against Turkey over its restrictive rice import policies. Portman told lawmakers efforts to resolve the issue through negotiations had failed.
We've had discussions with Turkey over the past couple of years. I personally talked to the trade minister there. We've had plenty of bilateral discussions telling them that we have serious concerns about the way they restrict our rice exports. They have a licensing requirement that is frankly unfair for our exporters, including requiring sometimes more than three times the amount of rice being exported, being purchased locally by someone who wants an import license. This is simply unfair, and that's why today we filed a WTO case against Turkey.
Turkey's domestic rice market is forecast to be worth more than $200 million in the year 2006. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns has requested $91 million in additional resources to safeguard the U.S. against highly transmittable forms of avian influenza. The request is part of the $7.1 billion national strategy to safeguard against the danger of a pandemic influenza outlined by President Bush on Tuesday. As part of the Bush plan, USDA will supplement its international and domestic roles in controlling the spread of avian influenza. Japan's Food Safety Commission, or FSC, on Wednesday signed off on a draft proposal that will lead to a conditional reopening of the beef market to U.S. and Canadian meat packers. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says the move opens the way for Japan to issue a final decision next month and perhaps resume beef trade before 2006.
I really do believe that finally we're seeing a light at the end of this tunnel. We're in a comment period here, I think, for 30 days. But then a decision can be made, as I understand the process.
But sources in Japan are saying even if U.S. trade resumes, it will be an uphill battle for acceptance. The Environmental Working Group has released its updated analysis of the distribution of farm subsidies through 2004. The analysis notes that farm subsidies are concentrated in 22 congressional districts, but charts show that most of those districts are geographically large districts in the Plain States, including several at-large districts. Texas ranked first, receiving $12.9 billion from 1995 to 2004, followed by Iowa at $12.6 billion, Illinois at $10.7 billion, Nebraska at $8.3 billion, Minnesota at $8.2 billion, Kansas at $8 billion, and Arkansas at $6.7 billion. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says the world should not tap dance around the issues surrounding agriculture and the global trade talks.
We've all found ourselves in that familiar situation of being at the high school dance without a dancing partner. Try as we might, we cannot negotiate a foxtrot or a tango with someone who just doesn't want to dance. American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman was recently in Geneva with agriculture leaders from around the globe preparing the World Trade Organization's ministerial meeting in Hong Kong this coming December. It being close to the end of the road for the Doha round negotiations, the ministerial, in essence, is a make-or-break situation for U.S. agriculture. The United States has laid out a serious proposal that is contingent on market access for our goods and products. The proposal is by no means final, but just another step in negotiations. It's now time for other countries to step up to the plate. It takes two to tango, and right now the U.S. is waiting for its dancing partner. In order to get the ball rolling on negotiations, there needs to be a commitment to reform from Europe, which outspends the U.S. 3-1 in domestic supports. Not only does Europe need proportionately reduce its expenditures, it must also agree to significantly lower its tariffs and expand market access. Developing countries with competitive export-oriented agriculture also need to do their share. Real trade reform must include substantial, ambitious, and quantifiable expansion in access to markets. The United States will do its share to reduce domestic support, but developed and developing countries must do their part in reforming or expanding market access opportunities. The American Farm Bureau Federation believes bold action is needed to provide commercially meaningful access to world markets for America's farmers. The U.S. proposal will significantly advance the position within the World Trade Organization agriculture negotiations. An agreement with changes in domestic support programs could result in significant short-term economic challenges for some commodities. But Farm Bureau firmly believes that long-term opportunities created by improved market access would overcome those short-term challenges. While we support the proposal as an aggressive move to expedite the process, Farm Bureau will not sign off on a trade agreement that does not include additional market access and other incentives. At the end of the day, the final agreement has to be beneficial for U.S. agriculture because no dance is better than a bad dance. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochka's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now to take a look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. He's in Lexington, Illinois, there at the elevator. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk about LDP, because on the corn, it's held strong this week, and it's big, as almost as big as it's been all year long, 47 cents. I think it topped out at 48. I suppose farmers are getting a little worried, especially with the cash market continuing to rebound, that this might go away at some point.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely some differential change that can take place here as the barge freight comes down and the basis continues to improve, that the government hadn't made that move yet, so it could happen as we move forward.
Any one point that you were thinking you wanted to make for sure that we got across this afternoon?
Well, one thing that I thought was interesting, you're speaking about the LDP. Some of the reports that came out here on Tuesday were showing that the LDP taken by farmers is only around 400 million bushels up to this point, which is well behind last year at about $1.5 billion. And you never know in that case whether it's a lag in reporting or what's causing that, but it was really a surprise to the trade that the farmer hadn't taken more LDP than he had.
Yeah, I suppose maybe they don't want to sit open and unpriced, and many of them would be that way on much of the grain that they've stored.
I think that's true, and I think that with the big crop last year, some income tax considerations probably are entering into it as well.
And your advice to them on both of those points, open and unpriced, in the income tax, do you have any?
Well, I mean, I guess I think you have to look at the LDP and taking it as that's a way that basically you're garnering about a third of the value of the corn crop at the this particular point. So you just have to look at it that way. If you've sold quite a bit of corn and you have to defer the income on that maybe to be able to take the LDP during this year.
And what are the bids there in Lexington today, Bill?
$1.71 on the corn and $5.77 on the soybean.
Thanks much. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. He joins us on Thursday afternoons to take a look at the cash grain market. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather. Your local newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. A vote to confirm Martin Cohen as chairman of the Illinois Commerce Commission fell 2 votes short of passage in the Illinois Senate today. Governor Rod Blagojevich had nominated Cohen in September to run the ICC, but Democrats, Republicans, and powerful utility companies have raised concerns that Cohen cannot be impartial when deciding on rate increases and other issues. The Illinois House overwhelmingly approved an update to state ethics laws today, despite complaints that the changes don't go far enough. The bill would strengthen disclosures and conflict of interest rules for pension systems. It also requires universities and state agencies to follow competitive bidding when they sign up corporations for sponsorships. But the measure does not include restrictions on state contractors donating money to government officials. It also leaves out any limits on the size of campaign donations. The measure now goes to the Senate. The Illinois House has passed a resolution criticizing the NCAA for barring the University of Illinois from hosting postseason tournaments due to its Chief Illiniwek symbol and Fighting Illini nickname. The resolution says the NCAA used inflammatory rhetoric that discourages the university's own efforts to find a consensus solution to the chief controversy. The University of Illinois hopes to be using wind energy to generate electricity for part of its Urbana-Champaign campus, perhaps as soon as next year. A $2 million grant from the Illinois Clean Energy Community Foundation will help pay for 3 wind turbines to be erected on the campus's south farms. A special student fee has already raised $300,000 towards the turbines. There's less than 2 weeks left to Indiana's first tax amnesty program. So far, delinquent taxpayers have paid or have committed to pay more than $66 million to the state. The original goal for the 2-month program was $65 million. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here in Urbana-Champaign. We're joined now by Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the day. Hi, Don. Good afternoon to you. It's a beautiful
day. Good afternoon.
Oh, man, it's a beautiful day here, and we don't get many of these in November with a 70-degree temperature outside the studios this afternoon.
Yeah, I tell you, we went through October without any really big waves of cold, and here we are heading into early November with really nothing extraordinary. We're really holding on to many areas of the USA, a real warm start to getting this late into the season, that's for sure.
And can we expect the warm weather to stay with us through the weekend?
Well, it is certainly looking that way. Most of the cold and unsettled weather is going to be staying up along the northern tier of the U.S. The northern Great Lakes will see some colder weather, but basically from the Rockies to the Gulf Coast to the Great Lakes and to New England, we're looking at above normal temperatures for the next 10 days.
And I noticed on my way over that that had actually brought the buds out on the trees. Any problems on the agricultural issues that we might be facing with this? For instance, is the wheat, which may have been starting to go dormant, coming out at this point?
Well, yeah, definitely. That's a concern. Earlier in October, some very wet and great rains in some of the wheat areas, and that was great news. But ever since then, it's gotten warmer. So we have actually seen some things come out of dormancy out in the western wheat areas of Kansas, eastern Colorado, portions of Nebraska, down into the southern plains. And while we don't see any extraordinary warm temperatures, we don't see anything getting too cold. So if we have a real severe freeze come in the next few weeks, that could be a concern. But at the moment, we don't see that.
And we'll have you keep tabs on that for us. Turn your attention to South America, where planting of soybeans has been progressing.
Well, a little bit more moist, although we don't see anything excessive. There might be some slight delays in Brazil due to some rainfall, as rain chances are going to be very good in Brazil over the next week or two. Now, Argentina, a little bit drier. Some of those growing areas are going to see showers, but nothing that should slow down any planting.
Any other hot spots around the globe we need to check in on? The South African areas, possibly Australia, Belarus, the Ukraine, China?
Well, let's first of all look at South Africa. They're looking at a little bit of moisture. In fact, some of the key growing areas are going to get some good moisture over the next week to 10 days. The pattern in South America getting a little more active and stormy just about everywhere. So the southern hemisphere going to see some active weather and precipitation in many areas, although we don't see any real hot spots or any real big problems there. Now, if we go into eastern areas of Europe, it's a little bit colder there and a little bit more unsettled, especially up in the northern, central, and western areas of Russia. And as we last discussed, areas of China going to see some unsettled weather, especially the western areas, and the north-central areas could see some precipitation. Could be heavy, and there could be some colder weather there as well.
Don, thanks especially for taking an extra day this week with
us.
We appreciate it. Don Day is with Don Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us usually on Tuesday afternoons. Made a special exception to fill in this afternoon for Peter Levitt, who is away today. That is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49. That for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports right there on the World Wide Web. Just go to will.uiuc.edu, click on AM, and then Agriculture. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at wyll.uyuc.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 70 degrees in Urbana at 237. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 31 points at 10,504. The Nasdaq, 12 higher at 2156. And the S&P 500, 3 higher at 1218. Bargain hunters have pushed crude oil prices above the $61 mark. At mid-afternoon, light sweet crude for December delivery was up $1.35 on the New York Merc to $61.05 a barrel. Mortgage giant Freddie Mac reports rates are up again, with the average for 30-year fixed-rate loans at 6.31%, compared with 6.15% 1 week ago. The average for 15-year fixed-rate mortgages, which are popular for refinancing, rose to 5.85% a week ago. It was 5.69%. And the Federal Communications Commission voted today to speed up by 4 months the deadline for television sets to be digital ready. Now TV sets have to be able to receive digital signals by March 1st, 2007. That's business news.
Yeah, my future's so bright, I've got to wear shades.
What happened? Did you win an award or something?
Just testing your angular gyrus.
Excuse me?
People with damage to the angular gyrus region of their brains don't get metaphors. That is, they have trouble interpreting the figurative meaning of metaphors. All they can figure is the literal meaning of what they hear and read.
So to a person with damage to the angular gyrus, you would have literally meant that you'll need sunglasses to protect your eyes?
Yes. These people often come up with complex and elaborate explanations as to the literal meaning of phrases meant to be figurative. So in this instance, a person with damage to the angular gyrus may interpret me as having meant that the depletion of the ozone layer is going to make it hotter and sunnier, or something like that.
Wow, that's elaborate, all right. So where is this angular gyrus?
It's situated within the parietal lobe at the intersection of regions that process touch, hearing, and vision. The angular gyrus is more developed in humans than in other primates, and so V.S. Ramachandran, who conducted this research with colleagues, thinks it may have played a role of some significance in the evolution of our cognition. He explains it like this. Any monkey can reach for a peanut, but only a human can reach for the stars or even understand what that means.
That's kind of cool.
It doesn't seem cold in here to me.
Har har.
This moment of science comes from Indiana University with underwriting from the Office of the Chancellor.
Today's program was prepared by Michelle Ross with help from Julie Stout in psychology. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amos.indiana.edu. For a moment of science, I'm Yael Cassander.
And I'm Don Glass.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers and planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for higher education, lifestyle, and cultural clients. On the web at www.ratioarchitects.com.
In sports, it's slim pickings tonight for pro basketball fans. The entire schedule: Indiana at Miami and Phoenix at the L.A. Lakers. The Pacers began life without Reggie Miller last night with a 90-78 victory over the Orlando Magic. It was Ron Artest.